The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
One of the most remarkable aspects of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. On September 21st, 1823, after retiring to bed, Joseph Smith prayed to know his standing before the Lord. The angel Moroni appeared to him and delivered a powerful message. Part of that message quoted the Old Testament prophet Malachi. "And he shall plant in the hearts of the children the promises made to the fathers, and the hearts of the children shall turn to their fathers. If it were not so, the whole earth would be utterly wasted at his coming." The LDS Church is well known throughout the world for its genealogical research, and family history has become an important element in the lives of Latter-day Saints. Joining me today are Sandra Joseph and Merrill White. Sandra, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are?
Well, I'm manager of the Family Search Center in the Joseph Smith Building. I've worked for the department for about 20 years, and nothing more to tell.
Okay, Merrill, how about you?
I've had the opportunity to work for the department for about 10 years. My current assignment is manager of patron services for the Family History Library, and so the Family Search Center falls into that as well, as we're assisting people that are interested in beginning or searching out their genealogy or family history. And my second job in the church actually was working in the Family Search Center. I had originally had the opportunity to start up the Granite Mountain Records Vault and then was able to transfer down to Family Search and to begin to learn how to assist people in starting their family history.
And this is all part of the Family History Department.
Family History Department.
Okay. I'm interested to know if you purposefully went looking to do family history as a job. How did you come to be in these positions?
I actually, out of high school, I began working for the airlines. And then I went on a mission with the expectation of coming back from the mission and working with the airlines. And I was not able to get back with the company I'd worked with. I had tried some travel agents and things like that. And my mom was actually a volunteer, a church service missionary in the cataloging area of the Family History Department. And she encouraged me to go to Human Resource and to see if something was available. And so I applied for a temporary job that would last for 6 months. And that was in what was called the Temple Index Bureau, a way that we would check what temple work had been done. By the time the 6 months was coming around, there was a position in another area in the department that I applied for. And I hadn't had too much exposure in doing family history and things, but I went to the Family History Library and learned how to use the computer programs and different options. I applied for the job, and I received it. So it was, I can see now, just the hands of the Lord. He wanted me to be involved in this. I've been involved in many different aspects in family history, with the technology end, with working with support and answering questions, telephone calls, emails, to working at the Family History Library and the Family Search Center. So I loved working with the airlines because of the customer service end. I loved working with the passengers, and I'm kind of a full circle back to that, and working in the Family Search Center and being able to work with the public and to provide a fun experience, a good service to them.
Thank you, Sandra. Merrill, how about you?
I had never planned on doing family history. I did get a history degree from Brigham Young University, but I hadn't planned on doing information with family history. I thought about perhaps going into pre-law, you know, doing law and some other things. My generation, I'm a big video gamer and had done that quite a bit. I'd actually been given a job to work for Electronic Arts in Florida, but I also was married with a young child, and my wife wasn't interested in moving to Orlando. And so after graduating from BYU, there was also an opportunity just to work here locally at the Granite Mountain Record Vault. And so needing to support my family, I went ahead and took that opportunity, which was quite spectacular. Nothing beats working in the vault and walking out every day into that canyon. That is just a glorious vision each day that you get to come out and see that. And it just kind of went from there. I had the opportunity after working there to come down and work at the Family Search Center. And then from there, I've had the opportunity also to help with family history consultants and now in patron services at the library. But that wasn't my goal. That wasn't my plan. It just kind of has gone that way, and I've just gone where I've been needed to go. And now it's ended up as my career. But that wasn't what I had hoped to do at all.
So. Very good. Thank you. Let's begin with a history of the Family Search Center itself. Has there always been a Family Search Center, or is it a relatively recent happening? Tell me about that.
Well, the Family Search Center was an idea or a concept that was started from President Hinckley back when they were redoing or refurnishing the Hotel Utah, which now is the Joseph Smith Memorial Building. And so one of the things that they had looked at was putting in the building, and so it's actually underneath the Legacy Theater there, but putting in the building an attraction to introduce people to family history. Many people, for whatever reason, think, well, the only reason I would go in the family history library is if I already have research I'm doing, and it seems overwhelming to many to start there. They don't feel prepared enough or ready enough. But with the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, a new entity on Temple Square, attracting many people in, as well with the movie Legacy, they wanted to have another opportunity for people to be introduced to family history. So the Family Search Center was then put in to give people an opportunity to begin to look up their ancestors. And this is also at the same time, this was in June of 1993 is when the center opened. So this is also when computers were really starting to come onto the scene with family history. So at the time when it opened, there weren't a lot of places that you could go to that had hundreds of computers that you could just go sit down and start to look up your family history. It was a real novelty when it first opened.
And so what's the major difference besides perhaps not as much, I don't know if pressure is the right word, for between the Family History Library and the Family Search Center? What's the main difference?
We pretty much work hand in hand. The library, as Meryl had mentioned, is where you have all the records that we've gathered from around the world. But in the Family Search Center, it's just an introductory stage. It's not a library environment. It's a place where you can have fun. But we're introducing people, helping them to understand how to begin, what resources are available. And we do have two different missions that we work with there. There's family history missionaries, mostly senior missionaries, and we have the Temple Square Sister Missionaries as well, who serve to assist people in beginning their family history.
So a person walks in and they immediately see these friendly faces there to greet them, the missionaries, either the senior missionaries or the sister missionaries. What can they expect to find in, say, the 20 minutes that they have to spend there?
It's going to depend on where they're from, what they know about their family. We have some coming in who know quite a bit. Others don't even know Grandpa and Grandma's name. And so we try to help them organize their thoughts, what they know about their families. And all of the resource we have is the Internet. So depending on what they know, what country they're from, will depend which website we'll start or what product we'll introduce them to.
So that's another question I have is the Family Search Center, as far as the information and the connections go, connected to the Family History Library? Is it the same information or?
It is the same information. With it being just the Internet, the same websites are available in the Family Search Center as the Family History Library. And so pretty much our purpose is to get them introduced, to help them turn their hearts to their ancestors. With Temple Square Missionaries being there, they can help people to identify that feeling, that excitement they get as they start finding information about their family, identify that that's the spirit of Elijah and the importance of it.
So the information obviously has been hard fought. It's come from so many different places and through many different sources. Let's just do a quick rundown of the history of gathering family history information. Can you kind of give me a...
Well, the church, as we well know as members, the church has always been encouraged to keep a record and to begin to gather records. And so, you know, the early history of the church was beginning to be recorded under the direction of Joseph Smith, and records started to be gathered even in the Nauvoo period when Baptism of the Dead was introduced. But really, after they got into the valley in 1893 is when they or 1894, the Genealogical Society of Utah was established. And that's really when the church made an effort to really begin to gather records, not just as families, but really as an entity or as an organization. And so it was a really small collection when they first started. Elder Franklin D. Richards donated his personal collection. It started in an upper room on Temple Square. It was the historian's office. And from there, the church has just begun to continue to gather records continuously. It was in the 1930s that they really started to look at gathering through microfilming, where they began to go out and microfilm records to start to bring them in from other countries. Later in the 60s, built the Granite Mountain Record Vault to be able to then house them and protect them properly. And now we have over 2.5 million rolls of microfilm, over 3 billion images. Just it started small, but it's just something we've continued to gather. But what we've started to realize over time is that there's so many records out there, we know that we can never gather them all. There's just too many. And so one of the things that the direction of the Family History Department is taking now is more of a community approach, to where Family Search becomes more of a platform to help people get to the records, not the keeper of all the records. We have a great collection, but there's also many other societies out there and many other governments and so forth that have these records that, as long as we can get people to them, that's the key.
It accomplishes the same thing.
Yeah. And for a long time, we just were always gathering. And it's not that we've stopped. We are going to continue to gather. But we didn't have this mindset of also networking together and really being the entity to help people use the world's records. And that's really been a little bit of a mindset change over these last few years with the internet and technology.
So for someone who may be new to the Family History Department and how it all works, who does the gathering? I mean, is there a dozen church history employees who go all over the world and take pictures? How does it happen?
Well, we have an entire group, our records and information group, that literally is our cataloging, as well as those that are gathering records and deciding which record sets we want to get, as well as what entities we want to collaborate and work with. So we work with national organizations, governments, archives, churches, to help gather or to just make them available through those organizations. And there's quite a few individuals that are involved in this, both missionary and employee. And then we also have quite a few camera operators throughout the world that are now out gathering everything digitally, where prior everything was microfilm gathering. Now almost everything is digital gathering, so we can push it to the internet faster.
So can you give me kind of a rough estimate of how many people
are? I'm not...
Including missionaries, I would say.
I'm not completely tied into that group, but it would be in the hundreds of people that are helping make that happen throughout the world. Just in the Family History Library alone, we have a little over 100 employees and anywhere from 5 to 650 missionaries and church service missionaries, and that's just for the library. So there's a pretty good amount of people making all of this happen.
Do we know how far back these records go? I mean, what's the oldest record we've ever found, or something similar to that?
I think the earliest records they found were some of these clan dynasties and so forth that go way back into the BCs. I don't know how far back they go. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
That's very fascinating, regardless.
They've been able to find some of these old dynasty records in Asia and so forth that do go a long way back. And I'm pretty sure it was our Asian records that go back the farthest.
Wow. So let's get back to the Family Search Center. How popular of, you know, you mentioned that it was built as an attraction. How popular of an attraction is it on Temple Square?
When it began, as Meryl mentioned, computers were pretty new, not many in the households. The Family History Library, I don't know if they had any. If they did, it was very few. So it was an attraction in, oh, here's a computer, new technology, let's try it out. So as people have received computers in their homes, the Family History Library has a lot. The attraction of the center, in one sense, has gone down. And so they're in the process of remodeling, creating some new exhibits for hands-on opportunities. So we don't want people just to sit at a computer to experience family history, but we want them to look at exhibits. We've got a photo opportunity area where you can get a picture of yourself and with the docks of Ellis Island in the late 1800s when there was huge immigrants. We're creating a Record of Our Lives exhibits where you can learn about ancient records, middle-age records, and the types of records you can find today. So we think that more people will be drawn in if we have hands-on displays, things for them to learn about, to try, for which would appeal to all age groups and not just the computers. We'll still have computers, but we're creating new exhibits to bring the crowds back in again.
That sounds very fun. About how many visitors per year does the Family Search Center get?
Right now we have about 100,000 per year.
Wow.
But when it first opened, it was the hundreds of thousands. It was really busy. And it's just slowly dropped off because of the uniqueness of it.
Oh, right, because of computers aren't that unique anymore.
Yeah. But now we're trying to make it yet again an attraction, not only for the Joseph Smith Building but for Temple Square. That so visitors and tour groups, if they're in the valley, staying at a hotel or just touring Temple Square, it would be you really need to go over to the Family Search Center and take an opportunity to see what they've put together.
So are these that you've described actually installed right now, or are some yet to come?
The Ellis Island exhibit, the photo op area, that is up, and we've got the ancient records section available. So we hope by the end of the year we'll have the other parts of the Record of Our Lives for the Middle Ages and records of today.
Very good. So let's say that I am visiting from an obscure village in, say, Iceland, and I walk into the Family Search Center, and I have a good 30 to 45 minutes of time to spend there. What are the chances that I'm going to actually find something that means something to me?
For the internet, a lot of it's going to depend on what those countries have put out, what's available, what they've digitized. So probably one of the first things we do is show them the library catalog, introduce them to the types of records we've collected. We also have some links to international websites that we could introduce them to. But something for foreigners that I have found can be successful is to introduce them into a way to organize their genealogy. They know something about their family, and we have a program that they can download for free called Personal Ancestral File, or PAF, and this allows them to start with themselves, add their family members. They can add photo images that they've scanned, digitized. And this is something they can do at home and organize, but we'll also introduce them to family history centers. The church has, the Family History Department has over 4,500 centers all over the world that people can go and receive help and order copies of microfilm. And so at that, when they first come in the 20, 30 minutes, we may not find grandpa and grandma, but we're going to introduce them to what is available and what they can do when they go home. So it's not a, you're here, this is it, but there's more they can do when they return home.
So do you have a favorite part of your job that you could tell us about?
I love my job. Meeting people from all over the world, introducing them to family history, it's exciting, it's fun. Also, working with the two different types of missionaries I work with the senior missionaries and the young Temple Square sisters, I get to train them all the time. So as new things, new technology, resources become available, it's fun to share this with them as they then share it with people as they assist them. So it's just teaching people and introducing them. It makes my job fun. I enjoy coming to work.
Merle, how about you?
Well, it really is the people. It's the opportunity to introduce them to things that they may not be aware that's out there, or things that help teach them a little bit more about their family or clarify things that they were unsure of. And it really happens on a daily occurrence, because they'll come in, they'll have a little bit of information that they can remember off the top of their head, and you have the opportunity now with the internet to get in and just start to find some of these records so quickly, especially if they're United States, with immigration and with census, and to be able to just start to unlock some things for them in terms of where they came from or where individuals lived. I had the opportunity recently just to help a lady that was from New York, but was really interested, but now lives in California, but was really interested in the immigration of her family, and knew that they had come across, but wasn't quite sure where or when and so forth. And she hadn't looked in a lot of years. And so many things have changed with technology. And so I had the opportunity to go right into the website and just start to look at some things with the census. We immediately found the family. And the second someone has the opportunity to see a record with their ancestor's name on it, even though their ancestor didn't write it, but it's their name. It was created around the time that they lived. Somebody else wrote it down. And for them to instantly see that graphic image of that original document, the spirit right then is so awesome, because it instantly starts to touch them and to touch you, and you just see softening. And if there was barriers that were up, they instantly almost fall, because they're able to immediately tie in and look at this record. And so we had the opportunity. Luckily, a lot of the information was on the internet. We actually found that the family came to Canada and then immigrated into the United States. And I was able to find those records and even a picture of the boat. And she really was overcome. I mean, she sat there for a good 5 minutes and just had to take it all in as she sat there and wept and just was really overcome by all of the things, because there was her great-grandmother. There was her family. There's the kids. It's all there. It's just a really enlightening experience for people as they start to tie themselves to their ancestors.
As Meryl had mentioned, we have tour groups that come, and they are so fun. They're from their 60s to their 80s, probably, retired. They're taking tour buses through the national parks. And one of the options what to do when you're in Salt Lake is a tour company brings them to the Family Search Center. And they are so fun. They have no expectation. They're just excited to try anything. But there's a gentleman I was helping one day in a tour group, about 80 years old, and as we found his father in the World War I draft record, he was able to identify that that was definitely his father's handwriting. And I asked him, I said, well, how do you know that this is your dad's handwriting? You're familiar with it? And he says, oh, yes, I'm very familiar with it. Because when I was in junior high and high school, I forged it all the time. It's like, wow, coming from an 80-year-old, okay. But we get fun stories. People love to tell their stories. That's what we see with the tour groups often, too. They have stories to tell. They want people to hear them. So family history, the turning of the hearts, is to your father's, but also to the children. And we encourage these people, the older individuals, to share their stories with their children, their grandchildren, because when they've passed on, those stories are gone. So the stories are fascinating and need to be shared as well.
Sounds like family history should be a lateral thing as well, mm-hmm. as being vertical. So
it is a part of what people can do when they go home. On a form we have called How Do I Start, it says, gather information, talk to family members. And so if you're a younger generation, we encourage talk to grandma and grandpa, aunt and uncle, mom and dad. But if they're older, they don't have those people to talk to. So we turn it around and encourage them to share their stories.
Very good. Along with that, what are some of the other things you think people gain from records other than names and dates? I mean, this connection I think you're talking about is an important part of it.
Well, and as you start to gather these names, you then start to also find clues for them to continue to extend your pedigree. Where does it say they were from, especially if it's an immigration? What ports did they immigrate from? What ethnicity does it say they had, and language and so forth? So it really starts to help tie them in to really see what other records they go to. But to me, it all comes back to what we started off with today in terms of the turning of the heart. To me, that's the greatest thing they find, is that they really start to, their heart starts to turn to remember that they are here and someone before them sacrificed and did things, and they're a part of that person to a degree. Everything they are is in some way is tied back to this individual.
Let's get back to some of the displays currently there. There is one display with a list of the Howland family that include names such as Winston Churchill, Joseph and Emma Smith, Franklin Roosevelt, George W. Bush, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford. Was the idea to look for family trees of famous people, or is this something that was just happened?
To have the famous people captures people's interest. We have it at the top of the stairs in the Family Search Center. We have two different descendancy charts, and people are gathered around them all the time, just fascinated by, you have this one person back in the 1700s, and look at the famous descendants. So it gets their curiosity up. A lot of people are like, well, I wonder if I'm part of this family too. Who in my line is famous? Who am I related to? And so I'm not sure the base purpose. I wasn't there when they created the Howland chart, but it was to be an attention grabber is one of the reasons, and it definitely is. People, they're curious by who's that famous person. They don't always want the skeleton in the closet, but they're curious, you know, is there a royalty? Who's a famous person? But as Meryl was talking about the stories of your ancestors, that skeleton in the closet is part of your heritage. It's a story as well. It makes your history fascinating. So to have those charts, we love them because it captures their attention and curiosity.
So is the display highlighting Titanic survivors a similar hope, with just kind of an attention grabber? Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, we have a few stories of individuals who were on the Titanic, and that's what it's about. It is the stories. These are individuals. They live their lives, and we want to kind of turn it. What stories do you know about your ancestors? What events occurred in their lives? These are individuals. Some survived the Titanic. Some did not. But it's just helping them to turn their hearts to their ancestors and gain a curiosity, wanting hopefully to know more about those in their family.
So if someone read some of these quotes, Do we know that if the journals are in existence as far as the collection here is concerned, or is that just, was it available somewhere else?
The journals of the Titanic?
Yeah.
I don't know if we have that in our collection or not.
Yeah, a lot of that for that Titanic group, we actually had, the other reason we created that specific Titanic one was here a few years ago, there was a traveling Titanic display.
Oh, that's right.
That came through Salt Lake City. And so we wanted to tie family history to it. And so we found individuals that had a Utah Tire connection that may have been on the boat and survived. And so we specifically highlighted famous people on the boat, say as Molly Brown or the captain, but also highlighted individuals that had a Utah tie, whether they lived in Utah, gone to school in Utah, had family in Utah. But most of that information was in family possession that we were able to find out through study and research. Okay. But we got the information from the family. Lots of people don't think of the Titanic, though, as immigration. And that's what it was. And so that's how it ties in yet again to family history and people coming over and starting a new life and looking for a new beginning and those types of things.
Very fascinating. It seems that it was a common occurrence when someone would come through Ellis Island, immigrating to the United States, that when their last name was a little too difficult for the agent who was there at the desk, that they would say, well, okay, you're now going to be known as Mr. Jones.
I understand that that is quite a myth, that it wasn't really at Ellis Island. The names may have been written wrong because they had an accent and they couldn't quite understand it. But most people actually changed their names once they came into the U.S. and started settling, and people may have had trouble in saying their names. So it makes it difficult, but if they know what their name of origin was or something close, they could check the manifest. But they just kind of have to track the documents, tax records, voters' records, census, try to track where their family went while they were here in the U.S. But it wasn't too often, actually, in Ellis Island that the name got changed.
It was more of a personal choice after they got here, is what
yes.
It sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. So if someone is not near or is not coming to Salt Lake City, are there other family search centers that someone could visit?
Well, we have in many of our ward houses, we have family history centers. which aren't exactly like a family search center because they're not going to have photo opportunities and they're not going to have the displays and those types of things. But the real thing is they do have access for help and access to the website and many of the resources of the Family History Department. So we, and that's the same thing we try to tie in with people after they visit us, is we make sure that they have their nearest address to their nearest family history center to have that opportunity to yet again have a connection, yet again find help and begin searching. And even if they don't go to a family history center, our portal for family search is familysearch.org. And so we would encourage everyone to go to familysearch.org to really have that opportunity to search things out. And that website's going to continue to grow over the next decade. These last few years, we've put a lot of things in place to enable us, as our director always puts it, to be able to do family history in your pajamas. And so our goal is to make it so that when you get that inkling at 3 a.m., then just get on the website and you can work on it. And it's that sort of an idea.
Great. Thank you. Do you have any spiritual highs, interesting stories perhaps from your time in the Family Search Center that you could share with us?
I don't know if it's a spiritual high. I can share an experience that's come to mind of helping someone. A woman came in and she wanted to know more about her great-grandparents. Could not remember their first names, but knew their last name. Knew that the great-grandma had died in California. So we searched a death index of California, and the name's pretty unique. It was Wacek, so we searched, and when she saw one of the names on the list, she recognized that as her great-grandmother. From that, she was able to get birth, death information, her maiden name. And then as I continued talking to her, she remembered her great-grandfather had died in Arizona in a mining accident. So then, again, another website we checked for Arizona deaths and births and found her great-grandfather, that he was born in Bohemia, which she didn't know. But she also found that a great-aunt of hers was listed who she knew, but there was also a boy. And as far as she knew, this family only had girls, and it had touched her heart to see that there had been a boy who had died as a child, but no one had ever talked about him, and she was just very excited to know about this individual, a link to her family past. And so we have experiences all the time. A missionary just shared with me this morning, she had asked me about a website the other day that she wasn't familiar with, and she explored, she played with it. Didn't find any of her family, and she's like, oh, well, this doesn't help me. Later in the afternoon, a gentleman came in from Canada, and as they were talking, he said that his father was from England. After they searched a few websites, she's like, oh, I just learned about one. Let's take a look at this website. He was able to go back two generations and very excited to learn more about his family that he didn't. And so we just see often as you learn a concept or you learn about a new website or way to do something, quite often you'll be able to use that within that same day or a day or two later. And so I always encourage continually for the missionaries to continually learn and be aware of what's available so that you can help those who come in.
Very nice. Thank you. Meryl, any amazing or even funny stories you could share?
One of the things that I was just thinking of as Sandy was sharing that is almost on a daily occurrence as you have time, opportunity to help people. I thought about President Eyring, where he talked about we need to look daily for the hand of the Lord in our lives. And as you have an opportunity to help people do family history, you have that occurrence almost every single patron that you help. You literally see the hand of the Lord in their lives helping them or guiding them or others from the other side of the veil encouraging them. Another individual I helped recently shared a story where her father had passed away years ago, close to 17 years ago, and her sister had come to the funeral and said, you know what, she didn't really get along with her father, and she said, you know, I'm done with the family, said goodbye to her sister, said, I'm never really going to see you again. This is the last time we're going to be together, and left. And this lady that I was assisting was kind of broke up about that, but still wanted to do some family history and do some things. So she started to work on some stuff and came across an individual that was a great uncle that had served in World War II over in Europe. And so she just kind of felt a little fascinated about him and was interested in learning about him. And at the same time, it still tried to find her sister through other commercial means that are available today. And she actually came across her sister who, for whatever reason, now was interested in doing some family history. And so she shared some information with her that she'd found, as well as a little bit of information about this great uncle. Well, she immediately was drawn into this individual and wanted to also know more about him. And as I was having the opportunity to help her, we even found some more things. And so as I sat there helping them, I thought to myself, this is pretty amazing that here's this great uncle that they really don't know anything about that died in the war over in Europe. And yet they both have this extreme draw to want to learn more about him and about the family. And it's both of them feel that push from him. And it was just interesting to me as I was talking to her how much it almost felt as if he was there to a degree, even with the records we were looking through and trying to find information, and how it was bringing that family together and healing them with all the things that had happened. But yet it wasn't the mom or the dad. It was this long-lost uncle that they didn't really know anything about. And it was kind of weird that they were even studying him. But yet he was the draw. He was the thing linking them together.
Almost a daily fulfillment of Malachi's prophecy is when you see changes in these people's lives. Sounds very amazing. Is there, as we come to a conclusion here, is there anything that our listeners absolutely need to know about the Family Search Center?
We would just invite them, if they're in Salt Lake City and have the opportunity to come to the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, to come on down to the Family Search Center and give family history a try. It's really designed as a giant advertisement and a draw in terms to get people started and get them thinking about their heritage and just to look about leaving their own place in history and how have records been recorded and leave your own mark. Take a picture at Ellis Island and just get started and be interested in it. And that's kind of what we do with the tour groups as well. Is we just love to have them come down and get that little bite. Because once they've been bitten, things just go from there, and it's wonderful. And that's kind of why it's there. It's to get the bug going.
Sandy, any parting words?
A lot of people feel intimidated by family history, and so in the Family Search Center, we try to make it a fun atmosphere, a place that there's nothing to be intimidated by, but we just want them to have a fun experience, and that family history can be fun. We warn people, guests, as they come in, they're like, oh, I just have a few minutes. We tell them, watch out, it's addictive. You might enjoy this and want to continue doing it. But it can be fun, and they just give a try, and we've got some wonderful people there to help them get started.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Sandra Joseph and Merrill White, both of the Family Search Center that resides in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building here in Salt Lake City. Thank you again, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.